Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Locked On Wolves podcast for July 9th. The Minnesota Timberwolves have signed Jamal Crawford, and they have other moves in the works, if you believe the organization. I'm Tom Schreier, co-founder of ZoneCoverage.com, and on the phone with me today is Colton Molesky. Colton, how many 37-year-olds do you know that can ball?
You know what? Not very many. Not like Jamal Crawford, anyway.
Are you surprised Jamal Crawford is 37? Maybe it's just his frame or something. He just does not seem that old.
It actually doesn't surprise me because I honestly can't think of an NBA season without Jamal Crawford, if I'm going to be honest with you. Granted, I'm only 21, but I mean, he seems to be around for forever.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Doogie Wolfson, who is the Channel 5 guy, kind of the scoop meister, went on Twitter and basically went through all these, like, you know, connections Crawford has to the Wolves organization. And it's a lot of, like, he played with this coach or something. You know what I mean? It's not guys that are in the league anymore. It's not quite.
He played with 17 coaches. Do you see that stat?
Is that right? I mean, it's
17 coaches.
It's not quite Bartolo Colon for any Twins fans out there. It's 44 who signed with the Twins the other day. But he's in the running, obviously, in a $9 million deal. They can use the mid-level exception. We can get into all that stuff. The funniest thing is probably his most direct, kind of correlation or connection with the Timberwolves would actually have been Zach LaVine, who he mentored. They're both from Seattle, Washington. I remember talking to LaVine last year, I believe, or maybe even before that, about just kind of the influence Crawford has had. I thought kind of Crawford would help him as he made the transition into a sixth man. I really thought that's where LaVine was going. Is it kind of funny to you that it seems like they kind of signed him like a year later than maybe was optimal, not necessarily age-wise or anything like that, but just that he would have been a direct mentor to Zach LaVine?
I don't think so, just because I think Tibbs knew all along that he was probably going to move LaVine. And Rubio, I'm sure he knew he wanted to move, and I think after probably 3 months last season, I think he knew he wanted to move Dunn as well. So I think all these guys were in the works to move, and then these guys that he's bringing in right now, these are the guys that he actually really wants to work with, as well as the guys he's keeping.
Yeah, Jamal Crawford, by the way, entered the league in the 2000-2001 season at age 20 with the Chicago Bulls. Now, kind of a weird deal. He was dealt from the Clippers to the Atlanta Hawks, where he actually played in 09-10 and 10-11. And then as for his release, that's how he's able to kind of sign this fresh, clean deal with the Wolves. I believe it's a 2-year with a player option, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, what are fair expectations? This is a guy who played 82 games last year. I think decent shooter, although, I'm looking at a 36%. You know, not terrible, but not Kyle Korver. What's a fair expectation for 37-year-old Jamal Crawford?
I think the expectations are about the same as what we were thinking for Andre Iguodala, minus the opportunity to maybe see him play some starting minutes. I don't think he'll ever be that role. But coming off the bench, I think we have a very solid scorer who's going to get some buckets. He averaged 12.3 points per game last year. And so I think when he's coming off the bench and you have somebody who can knock down shots and can pass the ball around, and you combine him with probably some other guys who are going to spend a fair amount of time with that second unit. We're thinking Taj Gibson and Tyus Jones, those kind of guys. If we throw in a guy who can shoot from outside, a perimeter guy to stretch the floor a little bit for those more interior guys, more interior scorers, I think that this makes the second five unit for the Wolves more dynamic. And we've been talking about this probably since they signed Teague, that they need to make sure that the bench doesn't get forgotten, and they need to make sure that the bench is strong behind these guys. They don't want to end up with a Wizards situation where when the starting five come off the floor, then you're kind of giving up a lot of leads throughout the season. And I think they've done a really good job solidifying that bench unit. And I know that we've talked a lot about the bench and maybe people are getting a little tired of it, but that is really important to a tight. If you want to do something in the playoffs, then you've got to have a solid bench. And I think they've done a good job making sure that they have one behind Butler and Wiggins and Towns.
Yeah, the bench is huge. I mean, I understand it, that the fans love the starting five. I think Tibbs does, too. I just think in terms of not wearing out your guys, you know, and also in terms of versatility, I mean, the league's changed to the point where, yeah, there are copycat elements, but you may face, you know, a handful of different teams on any given night that employ different strategies. Obviously, it's gotten smaller. It's gotten more, you know, kind of shooting heavy, you know, pace and space and all that stuff, but you're still going to run into teams that play a little bit bigger or whatnot, or incredibly small. So I think the bench helps with the versatility. It's something Tibbs has emphasized over and over and over again, whether we're at practice, post-game, pre-game, anything like that. Do you expect, now Crawford's listed as a shooting guard, that's kind of Wiggins' best position. Do you see Wiggins maybe playing, obviously he's going to play minutes with the starters and likely at shooting guard. Do you see him moving over to the three then and playing some minutes with the bench to add kind of a scoring element when some of the other guys are on the bench, the starters?
Well, the thing I would really like to see is a lineup where you have Wiggins, Jamal Crawford, Tyus Jones, Teague, and then maybe do like Taj Gibson at the five and just do Taj Gibson as your big and then spread out the ball with a ton of guards out there. And yeah, some of those guys are bench guys, but when you have a bunch of guards just moving around the ball, and that's a lineup where if you're going up against Portland, maybe you want to throw out four guards for 20 minutes during the game and just see if you can run the floor and go really fast for a quarter, quarter and a half. And then if you get a lead, then you throw in Towns and you have Butler back out there and you go big again and you really mess around with the team when you're ahead in the paint. But again, versatility is key, just like you were saying. And the team that can throw out the most lineups and really adjust and morph and play kind of the role of chameleon from game to game, and especially when you're playing a 7-game series, that's the teams that are going to be really successful. And you saw that with the Warriors. There's times where the Warriors throughout the playoffs were playing, there were a couple times where they were playing Kevin Durant at the five. And so if you can just have players who are willing to switch positions and play in different spots and play with different lineups and not really worry about who they're playing with as much as how effective they are in their spot and how effective their teammates are around them, that's when you have a successful organization. And I think the veterans that they're bringing in are those kind of guys. I think Teague is going to worry about winning more than he's worried about if he's playing with Towns a ton or if he's playing with Gibson a ton. I think Gibson is going to worry more about grabbing a lot of boards than he is about if he's playing with Butler or not. I think Jamal Crawford is going to worry about knocking down shots and making the younger guys around him better than he's worried about playing off the bench.
There also is a veteran leadership component to this. You know, the Wolves, if you look at them, went from kind of this young green team that really did not deploy. I mean, I don't know how much Jordan Hill, for example, really nice guy, really kind of fun dude. I don't know how much of a leader he was when he wasn't playing much. Cole Aldrich, you know, kind of he's considered a trade chip at this point. I mean, a guy who really signed a reasonable deal, especially compared to the other contracts made, you know, given out last year. And obviously kind of well-liked around here as the Minnesota guy. But, you know, he was not getting a lot of playing time, and I don't think had like a KG like influence or whatever. I mean, how much do you think the veteran leadership is a component of this? Just that he's 37, been around the league, and probably has as much as he was successful at a young age. Maybe he can pull aside a guy and say, hey, man, I wish I would have done this when I was younger or something like that.
I think it's big. And I do like, too, that they have leaders who can lead in a bunch of different ways. You have Jamal Crawford coming off the bench and maybe being the voice in the huddle that's going to be calming guys down, that's going to be pointing things out that he's seeing from the bench, that he's telling guys to look out for and stuff they can do better. They've got Teague, who's an older guy who can tell them when they're playing together and when they're taking breaks, when somebody's shooting a free throw, when they're out on the floor, he can be pointing things out. Even Butler is an older guy. He's not an older guy, but he is somebody who has actually played in playoff series, who can be helping Towns and Wiggins out and sharing what he's seeing. So they have a bunch of different levels of age. They've got a bunch of different levels of veteran, and they've got veterans who are coming off the bench who are going to be starters. I really love the mix that this team has. You want to get your young guys in there, but I don't think it's good to have a team that's averaging like they were the last couple of years, the average age being 22, 21 years old. I think you want, like we have right now, some older guys in there who are going to be some voices of reason when the going gets tough, especially later in the season.
So it sounds like you like the signing overall, just kind of putting a stamp on it, saying, yeah, this is Colton's stamp of approval with the signing.
Absolutely. The Warriors paid $43 million for Andre Iguodala. The Wolves just paid $8.9 million for Jamal Crawford. And I think the difference between those two players isn't as big as a lot of people would tell you.
Yeah, I mean, still kind of being frugal, and you go back to last season, you know, Tibbs could have really made a mistake. It seems like as much as, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, going from Rubio to Teague's salary and just how much Wiggins is going to cost, how much Towns is going to cost, what do you do with, you know, Butler down the road? It does seem like he's being reasonable. I do want to touch on the CJ Miles thing real quick. It sounded like they wanted that first pick. I think if you take a step back, it's so easy right now to go, man, he's the missing puzzle piece and we need a shooter like that and this and that, and you just give up the pick. In the NBA today, especially for a team that has not made the playoffs for 13 straight years, it seems like that pick is super valuable. Not because they are expected to make the playoffs this year, but because you're going to kind of get in cap hell real quick, and that pick should be a, you know, valuable player in terms of you not paying too much. What did you think of kind of the CJ Miles saga? Are you upset that they didn't kind of turn over that pick in order to get him?
I think that in the end, when you're looking at guys like Jamal Crawford, CJ Miles, I think if you're able to get guys on the cheap, I mean, all these guys are bench role players. So if you're able to get one guy for a little cheaper than another guy, I think the difference is the margins you're cutting are pretty thin. I'm seeing reports all over the place that Tibbs still wants to sign two or three more guys. So I think there's plenty of moves that they've got left in the bag if what he's saying is actually legitimate. And I'm not too upset about the CJ Miles. I think that they're doing a bunch of good moves. And I think that the front offices that aren't getting stumped by that one guy that they had their eye on getting taken are the ones that are being successful in this offseason. And so when they're able to pivot so quickly, they've pivoted a couple times. They're looking at Millsap, didn't work out. CJ Miles, he's off to the Raptors. And they've pivoted really well. They've still gotten a bunch of guys, gotten in a roster that I think not only is going to play really well, but I think is going to fit into the head coach's system the best. And that's really what's important, is not only that you have really solid players, but that they're going to fit in to the scheme and the way that the coach is going to want to run things. And I think that's the team that we have now.
Yeah, I mean, Tibbs, system guy, micromanager, I think has kind of this, you know, a vision for what he wants to do. A lot of what you said just made sense. What's how much do you like the bench as it stands? I mean, is this team, you know, if things kind of go wrong or the, you know, things don't add up in the rest of the offseason, they roll out this team game one. How concerned are you about the bench?
I'm not concerned at all. I really like it. I like the mixture of, I think that the bench mirrors the starting five really well. And I think that there's a mixture of older guys that are going to steady the team or steady that second five when they really need some buckets. I think there's a few younger guys. We've talked about them a ton, but I really like Tyus Jones, and I think Tibbs really likes Tyus Jones, which makes me more confident in him too. And I think that there's a good mixture of young guys, older guys. I think there's some really good rebounders, some really good scorers, some guys who can move the pace of the ball up a couple notches. So I think there's a pretty even mix in the second five. And most importantly, I look at the second five and I'm thinking these guys are not going to blow a 10-point lead in the beginning of the third quarter. And I don't know if I'm just super optimistic or if I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid, but I don't think that this second five is going to lose a game for this team. I think if this team loses games, it's going to be because they were just beat straight up, not because they have a weak bench or there's holes in the starting five. I think this is a very complete team that Tibbs has put together in one offseason.
There's, you know, and again, I've just been covering the Twins and kind of, which is kind of the summer task I have, I guess. And I've been following Twitter, a lot of Wolves Twitter right now. Some people have pointed out the Wolves basically have a lot of 35% shooters, basically, not that 40% shooter that it seems like they're aiming for. Kind of piggybacking off the last question, I mean, are the Wolves okay in that circumstance? Can they get by? Do you think that maybe the rising tide lifts all the boats? Maybe one guy emerges as a better shooter than expected. Maybe a Wiggins, for example, with an overhauled shot, which actually looked great in the beginning of the year and then kind of tailed off. Or do you think they need that 40% guy or another shooter in order to compete in the, you know, space and pace NBA that's so 3-point shooter heavy right now?
Two things I think of when you ask me about shooting. The first thing is, I really honestly think that Towns is going to be generational talent. I think that he is going to compensate for a lot of deficiencies that a few guys might have scoring from night to night. You think of guys like Teague and Wiggins, who are good shooters but might be a little streaky at times, especially later in the season. I think that really this team is as good as Towns is going to be. So I think if Towns takes another step next year, that's when this team takes a really big step because they have all the pieces in place. Now, I really think that Tibbs is just kind of putting it on Towns' play and saying, all right, we've got a really good team. Now, any deficiencies offensively, that's on you because you're the guy now. You're the guy who's going to be a really, really exceptional player in these next 10 years of your career. And I really think he's going to be one of the probably the best 5 to 8 players for the next 10 years, probably, once he takes that next step. The other thing is we talked about it a couple times, especially when Jimmy Butler joined the team. Wiggins, I think he'll be fine playing that second fiddle role. I think Butler will take a more controlling position over the team, more of a leadership position. I think Wiggins, he's going to be like that Klay Thompson where he's going to be solid defensively, and then probably every third night he's just going to explode offensively with a 40-point game. And so I think if you can plug in other guys from night to night to do offensive things, you can just count on Wiggins a couple times a week being really, really good offensively because he does have that shot, and now that he isn't expected to be the main guy, I think that's going to take a lot of pressure off of him, and I think he's going to play a lot better because of it.
What would you like to see have done? I mean, you seem pretty happy with the team. We talked about the bench, the shooting, all that stuff. But are you looking for the team to move that pick in Aldrich? Is Jang in play for you? And, you know, who should the team be targeting if they're going to continue to make moves?
I would like to have them hold on to that pick and maybe Aldrich as well. And maybe a couple other guys on the roster. I'd like to have them hold on to it. And then when you're thinking a few months into the season before the trade deadline during the season, that's when I want them to make a move. I want them to look at the team that they have right now after it's been a month and a half of them playing together, see what holes they need. If there's an injury, hopefully that doesn't happen, but injury is a part of the sport. If that happens, then they have these pieces to fall back on, because while you want to really stock up and set up your team for success in the offseason, you also like to have a couple chips in your back pocket. Like you don't want to bet all your money on that one pony, right? You want to have a few bucks in your back pocket for that underdog that you think maybe can do it too.
Love the gambling.
Yeah, exactly. You got to have a good gambling analogy. So you want I want them to hold on to that pick because I really think they're not going to be drafting at that spot. I think they're going to use it as a piece to trade away. And now I just want them to pick up a piece midway through the season to maybe plug in a hole. So maybe shooting is a little bit more of a problem than we suspect. Now they have a draft pick. They have a couple pieces on the roster. Now you can make a move for a shooter.
Makes sense. Now we will be back Monday, assuming your schedule's good. I probably should have discussed this off air, but they do have...
I am always available for zone coverage. I always Woo-hoo! Like to make it happen, whether I'm moving people in, moving people out, whether I'm in Canada, out of Canada, I always like to make it happen for zone coverage.
Man has gone international. So they are having a press conference tomorrow at 1 p.m. I'll be there. We'll probably pod shortly after that, at the very least, kind of late afternoon, and see if they make more moves, kind of what they're saying, if there's more moves on the way that they're kind of previewing or teasing or whatever. But you know, looking at it right now, the one thought I have is that on paper, this team makes sense. We've discussed this in the first 20 minutes of this podcast, or however long it's been. And, you know, it seems like Tibbs is kind of, as expected, orchestrating things very kind of Tom Thibodeau, like how they fit the system, guys he can micromanage, add some, you know, age to the team, you know, fill some vital roles. I guess my chief concern for this team next year is not just that they'd miss the playoffs for the 14th straight season and all kind of the implications behind that, given the hype and the Mall of America thing with Butler and just the Butler trade itself and the kind of national spotlight, if you will, on this team now. But it's just that, like, you always see it in sports where things on paper don't always play out like you would think in reality. Is that a chief concern for you? Are you worried that kind of Tibbs is kind of playing, for lack of a better way to put it, like kind of 2K, and sometimes 2K basketball doesn't really translate to reality?
I am a little nervous that if this doesn't work out, what the repercussions will be, because they are spending into the luxury tax, so they're going all in on this year. And if it doesn't pan out somewhat this year, I think that the repercussions could be a little more severe than maybe they should be. And so they are taking a bet on this year. I think it will pan out, just because it's not like football where you're depending on a 53-man roster, or even if you're looking at starters, like 22 guys to really pan out. You need 8 guys to really play well throughout a season and really work together. So barring any injury, knock on wood, barring any injury, I really think this team can play together. And more importantly, I think that most of these guys honestly are unselfish enough and want to win badly enough that this could really work out. And I think the coaching staff is in the right spot. They have the right players so that this can work out. So I don't see this going sideways on the Wolves. But if it does, I am a little nervous about what the front office's response is to going to the luxury tax and really going in all in on this season. But I really don't see that happening. I know we're jumping out in front of the skis a little bit because we haven't even played a game of the season yet. Right. But I really see this team meshing well together. And I think that this has been a couple years in the making. I don't think that that all of a sudden Tibbs looked at the end of the season and said, wow, we could actually go for Butler? Well, yes, let's do it. No, I think this was a few years in the making. I think he knew the guys he wanted to build around probably after his first year, or maybe even midway through his first year. And I think he knew the guys that he wanted to trade for and wanted to make moves for. And so I think this was a thought-out process, not just one that they were jumping into this offseason.
Yeah, keep in mind, this guy has been on a sabbatical, knows people around the league. I mean, he was photographed, I think, talking to the Warriors GM, you know, today. Very respected by kind of the top guys in the league. Certainly knows, I really think he knows the players. If you look back to what Taj Gibson said, or he said about Taj Gibson, you know, last year before, you know, he was thinking offseason or anything, really descriptive. You ask about the opponents. We always joke about this in the pregame coverage for the Wolves. He talks more about other players than he does his own, in part because he probably doesn't want to lift one guy too high or bring one guy too low or say something that's going to kind of disrupt the locker room. So I trust his knowledge of the league. I trust that he's leaning on people who are very smart NBA basketball people. I think the other thing is this season's boomer bust no matter what. This team has not made the playoffs in 13 years. You know, more than half the teams in the NBA make the playoffs. The fans are restless. There's 11,000 people showing up, dead, you know, diehard fans, hoping this thing turns around. I believe that there are an incredible amount of NBA fans in Minnesota, let alone around the league, that really will, you know, fall in love with this team if it works out. But you know what? It's not like he can, you know, if he doesn't go all in this year, he can go to Glenn Taylor next year and be like, well, you know, we didn't make the playoffs, but I got a plan. He's executing his plan. I mean, that's the way I see it. And I think either way, they were kind of screwed, right? They're no matter what, they're screwed if they don't make the playoffs next year.
Yeah, this is definitely the make or break year. But at the same time, if you're going to have a make or break year, this is about as loaded a deck as you can give yourself.
Go all out, man. You're a gambler. Go all in. Push all the chips in, baby.
Put all the chips in the middle of the table, and let's see what the cards give you.
I know you're an NBA guy in general. Do you have any other moves kind of around the league, or just any other kind of general NBA stuff you want to cover here?
Yes, absolutely. Markelle Fultz out with an ankle injury. Why do they let 76ers play summer league games? Just keep them out. Don't let them play. Trust the process in the regular season. It's not your time. Get out of the summer league right now.
They should
put all the 76ers starters for the rest of the summer in a shipping container with a hole for food and water that they can put through to keep them safe so that we can actually see if the process works sometime before I die.
The NBA guys just don't like them. That's what, no.
They don't.
But seriously, this summer league actually has been incredibly eventful. Locally, you look at the Patton injury, just kind of how concerning foot injuries are for big men, let alone kind of the development he had to go through. This is a guy, again, it's been said 100,000 times, but as a freshman with 6'2", you know, the huge sprout and growth spurt, we kind of wanted to see what he could do. But also, I mean, other things in the summer league, you talked about that injury. You have the whole LeVar Ball, Alonzo Ball thing. I mean, anything else in summer league, we'll get back to the offseason real quick, the transactions, but anything else kind of, you know, you don't want to, you got to be careful with anything that happens in Vegas, right? But in many ways.
You never know what'll happen.
Right. And the whole old line, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But like, honestly, what other things have you kind of been watching? What's caught your eye? Are you sick of LeVar Ball yet?
No, I love LeVar Ball. Are you kidding me? I love when somebody just gives me my story for me. I love that.
The media certainly does too. I mean, the media out there.
New Paul Pierce for Boston. Jason Tatum.
Yeah,
lighting it up.
Yeah. No, and Lonzo looked better in the second game, right?
A little bit, but I mean, he had a triple double, but it was 11 points. He still shot. I think he only made two shots from downtown, two or three shots. Like, it's not, it was easy to caption it as a comeback with the triple double, and yes, it's impressive for a guard to get a bunch of rebounds to make for the triple double. Assists are key for a point guard, but he was still putting up a lot of shots and he only had 11 points,
and he's missing against competition that by and large will not be in the NBA.
No, and here's the thing that they were going back to before he was drafted. Is that release that he has, that low release, going to be a problem for him? Because it looks like it's kind of mess when big guys are getting into space and playing up tight to him, and he's got that low release, and he knows where he's letting go of the ball and how big the guys he's up against are. Is that messing with his shot at all? I don't know. I haven't watched every single minute of him play, and I'll probably do that before the season starts, go back and watch all his film. But right away, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but it is a little bit, it's nervous status. We'll put it at nervous status.
Nervous status. I love it. Any other final thoughts about the NBA at large? Anything we missed?
Kids, make sure your license is good before you take an illegal use.
Yeah, we missed that. Yeah.
Make sure the license takes. Make sure it takes, kids.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting deal. The Wolves came out and basically said this is resolved. It sounded like Tibbs literally jumped on the computer and typed that out and emailed it.
right away.
But
did you find why his license was suspended in the first place?
No,
I was everywhere.
The one thing I noticed, and I did talk to a few people. This is off the record, but with a few people about this, you know, these players do jump place to place. I think New York has particularly hard line laws on this. And I don't know, the people I know, I mean, I know a guy I was talking to from California, has been in Minnesota forever, still has the Cali license. I know my brother is not going to listen to this, so it's fine. He's in Chicago and he still has Minnesota plates and Minnesota license. Sometimes, you know, some of these states are a little stricter on that. I think more is to come on this. It sounds like the Wolves are very, very confident, for whatever it's worth, that this is not going to affect it. It's going to be taken care of. Maybe got a little overblown. It was jarring because it was like a Saturday morning, and I remember waking up, and I was going to go play pickup just in case the Wolves need, you know, a shooter or something, or just a body to throw on the floor. And actually, in years past, I've joked like they may just start taking media members out, especially
you
when he had
go to Brooklyn. because they will take anybody.
They might.
Take literally anybody.
They might. But in those years where you had like McCall Jellibal or whatever, I'm probably saying his name super wrong, but or like Chris Johnson when people were chanting MVP, there were years when I was like, you know, honestly, I was just at Lifetime knocking down shots. I mean, I was right next door. I can grab my you know shorts and jump on out there. But
I would love if you made the Timberwolves roster.
My boss
is on the floor.
It would be terrible. It would literally like you'd. It would be unfortunate for everyone involved. But seriously, the where's that going? Oh, the news breaks. I think it was like a Saturday morning. I was like, all right, Colton, you got to take this one.
hey, for just the line of, I am doing this stuff from literally everywhere. I was actually at a farmer's market, had my computer because I wasn't going to get caught without my laptop again. My computer in the back of the car. And I typed it up at the farmer's market.
What a pro. I love it. But I mean, it just, it maybe is a little more jarring when you get like I got an alert at like 7:30 and I'm like, oh my God. Like I thought, like, you know, when you're groggy in the morning, I'm like, wait, did Taj Gibson die? And like, of course that's not what happened. Like, I was like, what news can I be getting about the Timberwolves at 7:30 in the morning? So maybe it's a little more jarring than it is. You hope he's on the floor. You hope it gets resolved. You also hope he's not obviously involved in criminal activity. Although the impression I get is not only are the Wolves trying to be, you know, a class organization, you know, win on the floor and don't make trouble off it. I also don't think Tibbs puts up with that stuff. You know what I mean?
At the end of the day, in all seriousness, at the end of the day, it was Taj Gibson, not Jimmy Butler. So we're going to be okay.
Right. It's important we cover that. Anything else that kind of got you going about the NBA?
You know what? I could always talk about the NBA, but I think I'm good for right now. I think I'll save it for tomorrow.
Listen in tomorrow. It'll be after a press conference. It'll be super exciting. For Colton Molesky. Always. For Colton Molesky, I'm Tom Schreier. This has been the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.